Words of Warning. January 13th, 1901. Typed. Satan is a diligent student of the scriptures. He understands what is symbolized by the Jewish service. He sees that the Day of Atonement has a bearing on his life, that the scapegoat chosen to bear the sins of the people represents himself, that he must bear the sins of all who come to Jesus, and that those who continue in transgression must bear their own sins. Satan calls his angels together, and a council is held. The great day of judgment is soon to come. It is right upon them. But God will not punish transgressors until the world has been warned. The message of the third angel is to be proclaimed. What course shall be pursued to hinder the proclamation of this message from going to the world? Satan sees that he must make the most of the present opportunity. His time is very short. He must make a grand rally of his followers against Christ. From the time of his expulsion from heaven, Satan directed his efforts against the law of God. He heaped upon it the rubbish of tradition and prejudice. But in 1844, God directed the eyes of his people to the sanctuary, and the first angel's message was proclaimed. Satan saw that this work must not go forward unhindered, or the world would soon be warned. He said, "This must not be. If we cannot do something to hinder the advancement of this work, the knowledge of the binding claims of God's law will go speedily to the world. A vast army will be raised up for the Lord to enter the dark places of the earth. Our rule will come to an end. The sins of those who accept Christ will be laid upon us." Satan went forth as a deceiver to put a lying spirit in the mouth of his prophets. He accomplished that which he purposed. Taking advantage of the disappointment of 1844, he shook the faith of the believers in Christ's coming. He threw them off the track, blinding their understanding in regard to the sanctuary question, which, if properly understood, would have established their faith in the prophecies. Unbelief came in. Many gave up the faith. Some remained in confusion and perplexity, not knowing what to believe as truth. Had they been able to see the temple of God opened in heaven, their faith would have been established and strengthened. Love and harmony would have prevailed. Up to 1844, the body of Advent believers were united in their work. Brotherly love was cherished and prevailed. This was an important time, the beginning of the great Day of Atonement. Oh, if all had been obedient to the light sent from heaven, if all had held their position without wavering, if none had cast away their confidence, if there had been no drawing back, how gloriously would the Lord's purpose have been fulfilled. Strong in his strength, the Adventists would have united their voices in proclaiming the third angel's message. The Sabbath reform would have gone forward with greater power than did the reform under Martin Luther. The truth would have been given to nations, kindreds, and tongues. In all the countries of the world, sentinels for God would have raised their voices in defense of his truth. Speedily, the tares would have been bound in bundles to be burned, and the wheat would have been gathered into the heavenly garner. But Satan's device succeeded marvelously. Division came in among the believers, and God's work was hindered. Shortly after the disappointment of 1844, there were a few who began to search earnestly for the truth on the sanctuary question. Great light shone upon them from the open door. They found a firm platform of faith and took their stand steadfastly upon it. Those who refused to accept the light upon the sanctuary question became bitter opponents of those who advocated the truth. Their obstinate determination not to see light made them an easy prey to Satan's devices. They joined the world and the churches in opposing the truth. They became instruments in Satan's hands to present to the people fables and traditions. The enemy exulted that he had been able so completely to deceive those who had been used by the Lord in giving light to the world. Thus was hindered the work which began so gloriously, and which should have moved forward in majesty and power. This is why we are still on the earth. The great adversary hindered the work which should have been done in a few months. Nevertheless, the cause of God is moving forward to its final consummation. Two messages have been given, and they are followed by a third, which contains a fearful denunciation against commandment breakers. A great work is yet to be done, and God calls upon his watchmen to sound the warning notes. But Satan continues to deceive. Long ago the time came when the Lord's messengers should have been fully equipped for warfare. But there has been, among believers, a settling down at ease. Sleepy, self-indulgent, backslidden, the people of God have not worked as they should. Few of those who claim to know the truth have gained a glimpse of the work that is being done in the heavenly sanctuary. Satan is doing his utmost to lead men to disobey God. He knows that when they violate the divine law, they take part with him against Jehovah. The enemy is not what many take him to be, a contemptible being of little consequence. He has a power which we do not rightly estimate, and as the end draws near, this power will be felt more decidedly. Filled with implacable malignity against all good, he works incessantly against truth and righteousness. And he is not alone in this warfare, for he controls all who do not by faith accept Christ. Many rest satisfied with saying, "I believe that Christ is the Son of God." But the devils also believe and tremble. We need a living, active faith, a faith that works by love and purifies the soul. Satan is keen and persevering. He is determined to gain the world to his side, and he knows no rest. He is a skillful general. He knows that of which many are ignorant, that everything in the plan of salvation centers in the sanctuary. Hating God's law because it stands between him and the object he hopes to gain, he works against it with all the power of his being. He longs to see God put out of the thoughts. Through appetite, he destroys thousands and tens of thousands. Giving men liquor and tobacco, he beclouds their perceptive faculties, making them incapable of distinguishing between right and wrong. He rejoices to see human beings feeble and indifferent, incapable. It fills him with evil exaltation to know that even in this day of atonement, many of those who profess to be keeping the law of God are corrupting the soul by self-indulgence. The mind cannot be clear or the brain vigorous because they yield to base passions. Among his people, the Lord sees a want of self-control, of pure, holy motives. God calls for a reform. By seductive temptations, Satan is trying entirely to deface the Creator's image in human beings, and he is working with marked success. He has set himself to impede all reform. But if those to whom God has given special light will seek to fulfill his purpose, if they will seek wisdom from on high, the world will be warned of the coming doom. Sin will be rolled back with crushing force upon the originator of sin. Satan's reign will come to an end, and Christ will appear in the clouds of heaven with power unto salvation, to gather his jewels to himself and to set up his kingdom on the earth.